You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 3rd, 2016, and episode number 263. Wow, time's just flying by. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, as always. And one thing, I've got like, my memory's like potholes here. So if I forget to say this, I just wrote this down to say this right away, just so I get it out of the way and I don't forget. But I'm talking to you guys at the end of the show. I just want to say, may the 4th be with you tomorrow. Anyway, this week's news includes a possible jackalope witnessed in Wisconsin. The hunt is on for Champ, and Paris finds a dish. That's not Paris Hilton, by the way. We're going to be covering the MUFON sighting statistics for April. Yes, I'll finally be caught up 3 days into the month. It's crazy. Back-to-back months of the MUFON sighting statistics to catch us up for the year already. And proof of heaven is obtained. The easy way. And Pop Goes the Weasel. You heard about that. That's a kind of a good, bad story all rolled into one. And it's over. Bigfoot has been found and photographed in England. Yes, you have to tune in for this one. This is going to be coming up in a couple of minutes. If anything, you have to listen to this story. I don't care if you go to bed after that one, but that one is worth it. Bigfoot is found and photographed in England, of all places. We'll also have the book of the week. Hopefully, I'll have time to squeeze in some conferences, convention updates. Yeah, I got a lot of stuff, a little bit too much stuff, actually. So we'll find out what happens tonight here on the Paranormal News Insider. Now, the Paranormal News Insider this week is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. IMHS is one of the few educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association, for which I am the executive director of, and currently designing a class for the E4 method, which I've talked about, mentioned here and there throughout this, this show over the years that I started out in 2011 designing. So where are we at now? Wow, the news. Well, first, you know, I always start off the show talking about the stuff that I'm involved in, and there's a pretty decent size event happening this weekend. I'm really, really excited for this. May 6th, it starts on Friday afternoon. I'll be driving out to Southwest Pennsylvania, and it's going to be a fun event. May 6th through the 8th, I'll be speaking on Saturday. Actually kicking it off after Eric Altman opens the show. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And it's going to be an adventure. Like I said, Eric Altman is the host. This is taking place in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Stan Gordon, Squatch Detective radio host Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, and wildlife biologist Rob Gratson will all be speaking at that event. And on May 7th, Trapper John R. Tice from the TV show Mountain Monsters, as seen on Destination America, will be making an appearance at the event. But that's not the best thing. The best thing is there's going to be workshops in between all the speakers. There's going to be day and night hikes, food, and a lot of fun. There's a lot of updates that were going on over the course of the last couple of weeks. But the biggest thing to mention here is that ticket sales are officially over as far as online. That ended on May 1st. But there are a limited number of tickets to be sold at the event in cash. But there are some stipulations here. In order to get into the campground, you either have to get a site. I got my tent site like, I don't know, 10 months ago. And yeah, tent site, I'll be roughing it, doing it old school, doing it the way we should, just to kind of get the set the mood, pop a little tent out there. And it's going to be cold, like 43, 44 Friday night. But it's clear and cool. And the moon will be a little sliver, so going to be out there looking at the stars, looking for UFOs too. So, hey, it's a multifaceted event if you want to make it that. And Friday night we'll be heading out and doing a little Bigfoot expedition. I'll be leading a group of people out, undisclosed area nearby the campground, and we'll be setting up shop and doing some calls, some tree knocking, and a little bit of education out there in the woods. So it's hands-on, and we'll have a couple of different groups set up kind of in a triangle area. So we're going to just kind of fan out here and do something that is really good. The last time I was a participant in this a couple of years ago, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society had a similar event. It was an expedition, no speakers or anything like that, but we were just out there in the woods all weekend long, and we had some really interesting results. And this is a very, very active area. And I'll talk about that. The book of the week actually has to do with that area. So I'll be wrapping the show up with the book of the week that will highlight some of this stuff. Now, if you're not at the campground, you're going to have to pay a $4.50 visitor fee to get into the campground. It's going to be packed from what I hear. There's going to be a lot of people at this event. So if you're not staying at the campground, again, you have to register and pay $4.50 for that Saturday, if you want to come check out the speakers, the vendors. There's going to be a lot of vendors there too, interestingly enough. Parking will be on the hill above the pavilion field. Empty campground sites and at the field on the far end of the pavilion if you're going to be driving and parking there. Now, they had some earlier this week, or actually last week, they had some fire danger. There was a forest fire in the area. That's all been taken care of. So they lifted the fire ban, which was going to be really bad because we wouldn't have been able to have the fun campfire. If you don't want to go out and investigate with us, you'd have to stay behind and have tell tales at the campfire. But now we can do all that. So it's going to be fun to cook out from all night long, both nights, I think, Friday and Saturday. And if you're going to be showing up, biggest thing, bring a folding or camp chair, preferably a camp chair, something you can throw over your shoulder, because we're going to be using those out in the woods where you go to do the expeditions. And I got to pack some recorders. Maybe I'll play some audio. If we get anything, I'll play it live here on the show. Seating is going to be at a premium. It's going to be first come, first served. There's 30 spots inside the pavilion and then rows of 20 outside the pavilion. We'll be in the pavilion speaking. Let's see. Like I said, I'm number one here. I don't know why, how that happened, but welcome announcements will be at 10 o'clock in the morning, 10 a.m. to 10:15. Probably be getting back from our expedition. I don't know, 2 in the morning? I don't know. We'll find out. The first speaker is myself, 10:15 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. There'll be a little break in between, and then there's going to be a workshop. Tim Cassidy will be talking about animal track identification and outdoor safety. Then a little bit of a break. Then Steve, the Squatch Detective Coles, comes on at 12:30. And then a little bit of an intermission again. And then Stan Gordon will be talking from 1:45 to 2:45. And then Dave Dragason and Robert Gratson from 3 to 4. Then workshop with Tom Ferentz talking about Bigfoot search tactics and gear, 4:15 to 5 o'clock. And then there will be an auction and fundraiser for Unity, A Journey of Hope, Fayette Friends of Animals, and Lucky Paws. So I know I've thrown some stuff in there for the fundraiser, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that's a part of that fundraising activities. Some guy you may have heard of, Cliff Brockman from the Finding Bigfoot TV show, has got some stuff there too. So if you want to go, PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure .weebly.com, and you can reserve a well, you can't really get your ticket now, but you can get information about the event. And if you want to go camping with me, well, maybe not with me, I don't have that much room in my tent, bennersmeadowrun.com, and you can check out that location. Like I said, we're going to be out there at night in and around that location, and out in the woods looking for Bigfoot. It's going to be a lot of fun. And speaking of Bigfoot and cryptozoology, obviously I'll be speaking on cryptozoology during that event. It's good that I'm leading it off. You know, it's not good because a lot of stragglers, people will be coming in at that time. That's cool. But it's good because I'll be talking about the basics of cryptozoology based on my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, which was the book of the week last week, if you were tuning in. And then on May 12th, a few days later, I'll be speaking at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio, which is northeast of Columbus, Ohio, on the topic. And I'll have some pictures and potentially some audio. Whatever happens down there, I'll be presenting any data that I gather and just kind of talking about this event there. And I'm sure, gosh, I might spend maybe 2 or 3 minutes talking about it during the show next week here on the Paranormal News Insider on Tuesday night. Who knows? Maybe a minute or two. I don't know. So that being said, let's jump into cryptozoology news, cryptid news for the week. And a strange little story here. I didn't know what to think of this when I read it. I was laughing, but then, I'll just read this thing to you here. An 8-year-old Nina, Wisconsin boy may have the cryptozoological find of a lifetime. The boy, only known as Clark in the story due to his age, was looking out the back window of his home watching the birds. Well, at least he wasn't playing video games. When he saw a strange creature moving in his backyard. Was it Bigfoot? Nope. Dogman? Nope. He described the creature with his statement, quote, "I saw something strange on the hill hopping across. As looking out, it quickly escaped into the grass," unquote. Huh. Well, it doesn't do much. He went on to describe a gray rabbit-like creature with shorter ears and stubby horns on its head. Clark also described these chilling details. Quote, "It also had tusks," unquote. He also stated that the creature had yellow eyes, and he said he observed the animal and then did what any good investigator would do. He went out searching for evidence. Clark stated, quote, "I saw it for about a minute. I went to check, and there were chewed leaves and an odd smell," unquote. Huh. Well, Clark gave no indication of the size of the animal or the type of smell he smelled, nor did he provide a crayon drawing of the creature. Was this the return of the jackalope? Well, could he have found this now extinct animal? Well, actually, if you know anything about the jackalope, you know that it was created by taxidermists and is a piece of folklore. So did the boy really see anything of significance, or were his eyes playing tricks on him, or was he playing tricks on those who listened to him? I kind of thought about this, and I do know a little bit about some of the folklore about the jackalope itself and potential causes for it. And there is a cancerous virus that infects a variety of rabbits, rabbit species, I should say, called cottontail rabbit papilloma virus, or CRPV, or Schoep papilloma virus. CRPV was discovered in 1933 by Richard Edward Schoep, who was conducting cancer research. Now, this virus causes strange growths protruding from the skull that could cause it to look like it has some kind of horns or something on its head, and as well as it coming through the mouth, which would make it look like it has fangs. And it's thought that this particular virus may have given rise to the jackalope stories, but No word on if he's found any deformed cottontail rabbits. But an interesting story. You don't really hear about eight-year-old kids seeing monstrous rabbits in the woods. We don't know how big it was, but just thought that was kind of a random, weird story. Right. Anyway, so GoFundMe. GoFundMe. We've all heard of the GoFundMe stuff. Different things people are trying to accomplish by asking other strangers for money. Well, stumbled across this one here. And if you don't know what GoFundMe is, GoFundMe, shouldn't say that too many times, GoFundMe is a fundraising website that has had its share of questionable money generating efforts. Now, you go on there, you create a little GoFundMe thing, and you say why you're asking for money, and people can see how much money they're gaining for this particular thing, and there's a deadline involved and all this and that. So it's, again, sketchy sometimes for some people that are doing it, but supposedly they keep track of all this stuff. But Scott Martis of Bradenton, Florida, has started a GoFundMe campaign about a month ago titled Lake Champlain Monster Hunt, and his focus is on raising $8,000 in an effort to locate Champ. And Champ is the monster that purportedly hangs out in the 125-mile-long freshwater lake that is in eastern New York State and western Vermont. And actually, there's a little bit hanging up in the province of Quebec in Canada as well. And the campaign states, quote, "I have been looking for confirmation of the so-called Lake Champlain monsters since 1992. I've been working with my current research partner, electrical engineer William Dragonis, since 2009. We have spent years individually and collectively looking for these creatures with sophisticated visual and audio detection equipment." Not sure what that is. "A Google search of our names will take you to all sorts of information about our history in this field of endeavor. We do not normally ask for outside funding in this pursuit, but we are both under financial stress at this time," who isn't, "and need additional funding towards our proposed expedition for 2016. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Thank you," unquote. Well, since the creation of this page on March 16th, 2016, they have managed to raise a whopping $155 of their hopeful $8,000. Well, I'd say it's pretty safe to say that Champ will be safe and he will live another day. The Lake Champlain monster has been rooted in local folklore since the early 1800s, although many sightings seem to have rational explanations that are typically misidentification of logs, sturgeon, or other objects that are not quite monsters. But I don't think he's going to make it up there with $155. I mean, that would cover gas to and from, but not much else. Maybe a rental of a canoe or a, I don't know, maybe a canoe or a rowboat. We'll find out. Maybe he'll pop up the news later on if he actually gets his money or he goes down there anyway. So UFO news. Speaking of GoFundMe, I covered this story back in March, and I mentioned this particular story in an update on Friday in my social media outlets. And it's about Antonio Paris. I've been not doing my job. I haven't been posting anything here in the chat room. If you're in the chat room, welcome to the show. Normally I post little links in the chat room about the stories I cover. To get people on board with what I'm talking about, give them a little bit more information, because you know that everyone in the chat room is always paying attention, and they're always talking about, you know, what's going on with the stories, and you know, just really chewing on all this information that I'm providing, and just really going through it and kind of going back and forth. And, oh, wait a minute, they're talking about pole dancing. Never mind. Anyway, just kidding, guys. I know what it's like. I'm there causing trouble during Frank's show, so I get it. So back to Antonio Paris. I mentioned this again back in March and through social media on Friday, this update that he has secured his mobile radio telescope he needed to attempt to explain the wow signal of 1977. And he's also secured a majority of the equipment he will need to conduct his experiments over the next 2 years to determine if one of two comets can explain the data obtained from the WOW signal that he's hopefully going to get from these comets that'll explain what the WOW signal was logically. Now, Paris launched a GoFundMe campaign on March 9th, just a few days before the CHAMP expedition here. But Antonio Paris successfully raised over $20,000. That's got to make you feel bad. You only get $155. Anyway, he has now acquired the telescope and will await the arrival of the first of two comets early next year that will potentially emit a signal that would possibly explain the WOW signal that has yet to be explained. Now, I've gone into detail about the WOW signal on previous shows here on the Paranormal News Insider. And basically, the WOW signal was obtained at what was called the Big Ear Observatory, which is just north of Columbus, Ohio. Again, back in 1977, during a sky survey by the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or known as SETI, and I did have a chance to visit the Perkins Observatory, which was the home of the former Big Ear Observatory, and was able to see the computer that obtained the data, as well as some other mementos of the former Big Ear radio telescope that was torn down quite a few years ago now. And while I'm sentimental about the WOW signal, it would be really nice to have a definitive answer whether it was caused by one of these two comets set to cross through the same part of the sky, Sagittarius constellation area, next year. And the other will be following that in 2018. Or possibly neither one of these comets explains it, and maybe we end up being visited by a friendly race of intelligent species that doesn't want to destroy us or use the Earth as energy or slave labor. I don't know. Well, probably the former. Paris is giving out full disclosure as to his ongoing expense account, as well as research logs that he's kept up to date. I think, of course, the last couple of days, every day he's posting something of what he's doing, which is really interesting to follow along on that progress throughout his experiments. And I'm sure it's going to heat up as we get towards the winter months, as he gets ready to conduct his actual experiments. And then we get to sit back and wait to see how he crunches that data and what he comes up with. I know I'm going to be really anxiously watching when this gets a little bit closer to that. And it's going to be really exciting, to be honest. And it's science exciting is a lot of sitting and waiting. And, you know, then boom, we'll have the answer either yay or nay. But then the good thing is we get to repeat the next year when the second comet comes into play. And if you want to follow along yourself, I think it's really neat that he's providing an ongoing research log on this website. I posted that in the chat room as well as through social media outlets. I posted this back on yesterday, May 2nd, on Facebook and Twitter. And if you're interested in that, you can go to planetary-science.org and click on the WOW signal experiment at the top. And you can follow along with what he's doing. It's really interesting, I think, that we can follow along to that information. Usually, you kind of have to wait on those kind of things. And scientists are busy. But Antonio Paris, I've been watching him for quite a while. I should say following him, not watching him. That sounds kind of creepy. But following him via social media for quite a long time. He's just a really interesting blend of science meets paranormal, or basically UFOs and UFO research. He's a great researcher, great investigator, but he's grounded in science, which is awesome to have somebody like that. And then doing something like this, it's kind of combining the two here with the WOW signal and using real science to disseminate this potential information. So now we're going to talk about the UFO sighting statistics. Now, last week we covered the March sighting statistics from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And before I get carried away on that, I want to thank Audrey Hamilton, who is a MUFON field investigator out of Pennsylvania, I believe. Yes, Erie area. Well, at least she was at the area MUFON Conference, Erie MUFON Conference last weekend. I really wish I could have made that. That was sounded like such a great event. I'm kicking myself, but I only have so much time to do all these things. That sounded like a great event. We'll talk a little bit more about UFO conferences because there's a couple coming up in Pennsylvania at the end of the year, if you're interested in that. But I also got to meet Audrey at the Butler Paranormal Conference a couple of weeks ago. It was great to meet a lot of people that I have just only talked to on social media. And she kind of caught me by surprise because I was packing up and they told us we had to be out of there by 7:30. So I'm feverishly wrapping up all my Bigfoot casts and different things I had and trying to get out of there. And she said, stop by to say hello, which I appreciated. And it's great also that she's providing this UFO sighting statistics. Now, you used to get it directly via MUFON. And I get an email once a month. And sometimes they do. Sometimes it's really late. And last year, during their big spike in events, they kind of fell behind with that. And it was really sporadic. I have access to a lot of information. Being a MUFON member myself since 2002, I have access to a lot of information via MUFON. But the emails were kind of sporadic here and there, and they're usually really, really late. But it's awesome to have connections in MUFON now. And I have plenty of, I guess I shouldn't say that. I've always had connections in MUFON. I know three state directors personally. But anyway, to get this information out to you guys quickly is really important to me because there is kind of a shelf life on some of this information as it's been put in the past. And getting it out to you as quickly as possible to me is very important. And like I said last week, I covered the March information. Granted, I took a little vacation, so I was out of town for a week, out of the country for the week. And I believe some other stories bumped out the UFO news. But here tonight, we're going to be caught up to April. And I go the extra mile. Now, MUFON used to do a little thing where they looked at the total population, not only of the U.S., but of each individual state, and broke that down per capita. So we knew what state was really having more UFO sightings per person than other states. And they kind of stopped doing that a couple, maybe last year. I don't think they did it much at all last year. And it was kind of a big deal. They started doing it a couple of years ago. And I found that interesting, although it wasn't significant. And maybe that's why they stopped doing it. But again, this data is based on the reports that they get per month. So it's broken down per month. But a sighting that was submitted in March may have happened in February, or it may have happened. Granted, they may have put it in March of 2016, but that event may have happened in 1985, for all we know, maybe a different month. So it's kind of not scientific data. It's just kind of just to give you an idea of what's being reported. And it's pretty consistent month to month. So when you have spikes, you have little things, you can kind of do some research to figure out what exactly is going on with these sighting statistics. And last year, you know, they had a huge spike in sightings. The largest number of sightings ever collected in one month was last June. I believe it was June or July. I think June. 1,402 total reports, with 1,180 coming from the United States last June. And a lot of that had to do with Hangar One TV show that was on, a very popular show with a lot of people. I know I was into it. Getting to see John Ventry is always a treat. Very knowledgeable guy. And I got to meet him this year, finally, for the first time at the Butler event. And, well, it's 7:30. I'm going to get yelled at here, so I better do this. You're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And, you know, there's always people in that chat room causing trouble. And I know tonight both Frank Lee and Kat Hobson are both in the chat room. Hello, guys. And be sure to tune in tonight at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, as Frank Lee will have on a special guest. Kat Hobson will be his guest, paranormal investigator and host of the Paranormal Experienced show that is here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting. Her show is on tomorrow night, but she's invading the Tuesday night man lineup. That's okay. They're going to have an interesting show. It's going to be a call-in show. Huh. Nothing ever goes wrong with call-in shows. Live radio is always kind to those kinds of shows. But it's going to be fun. I know I'm going to be tuning in and listening. It's an interesting show. And again, tonight, an hour after I'm done here, or if you're listening to the archive, you can probably duck out of the show a couple minutes early and catch them at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. It's going to be an interesting show. Two very knowledgeable people. Yeah, it's going to be a good show. Got to tune in for that. Now I lost my place. Okay, here we go. UFO sighting statistics from MUFON for the month of April. Now, March was kind of a weird month. It 628 sightings and 428 here in the U.S. It was a little lower than last March, but I kind of expected it to drop off a little bit. And I made a prediction. Yeah, I shut my mouth off and said that I was going to predict 670 sightings total worldwide and 445 here in the United States. Now, that's kind of based on a little dip in sightings. And last April, there was 709 total reports. So I kind of figured a little bit of a dip. I didn't figure it would dip as much as it did. But the grand total was 561 worldwide reports and 403 reports here in the United States. So, oops, I missed that a little bit. And that would translate to 0.126 average per capita. And the average per capita last month was 0.134. And that's a drop off from February, which was 0.138 average per capita, with 611 total reports, with 443 from the United States. So strange as it is, February is the second largest month for sightings. January is number one. Well, January had 31 days, so that's not fair. But anyway, to look at a little bit of a breakdown here, 561 total worldwide reports, like I mentioned, turned into MUFON. Now, this is just through MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, the largest organization here in the United States, comprised of numerous amounts of investigators, researchers, and just members, people who are just paying for some data and information and for the ability to whip out their little blue card and say that they're a member of MUFON. But a lot of researchers and investigators out there that take these each report and investigate them, whether through a phone call or actually visiting and visiting this particular individual client and disseminating this information, looking for logical things or just documenting them as much as whatever that particular client wants to give. Now, I was a trainee, a MUFON field investigator trainee a number of years ago, so I did get to see that end. And I've also investigated a few cases and turned them over to MUFON, so dealing with their investigators that way as well. So a little bit of idea how this stuff works. If I had a little bit more time, I would love to get back into that as an investigator. It's a lot of fun. And I love the scientific aspect. You ever get the chance to really get involved in MUFON, I highly recommend, even if you don't want to be an investigator, if you want to learn how to investigate. It's a little pricey, but their field investigator's manual is awesome. It's one of the reasons why I've not written a book on a handbook for the amateur ufologist yet, although it's kind of sort of in the works. Probably shouldn't say that, but anyway. Great information out of MUFON. So anyway, 561 reports, 403 came from the United States, 49 from Canada. Thanks, guys. 23 from the United Kingdom, 12 from India, 11 from Australia, and 8 from Germany. Now, there was a total of 39 countries that turned in reports, with 23 countries turning in only one report, including Antarctica. I cannot remember the last time I've seen Antarctica turning in a UFO report. Really weird. The top states for the month of April were California with 49. Now, California is always number one. And the reason for that is they had the largest population of any state in the United States. So that's usually why they're number one. Not because there's more UFOs. There's probably more crazy people in California than anywhere else. But no offense to anyone listening, but you know it's true. Come on. Arizona was second with 26 reports. Pennsylvania, 24. And that is kind of significant there. Pennsylvania really jumped up. And I'm excited about that because hopefully maybe I'll see some this month when I'm out there for the next couple of nights. Well, not couple of nights. Well, Friday night, Saturday night. And Florida. Florida is also in the top five in population. So they're expected to be up there, as well as New York. Florida, number four here with 22 sightings. Texas and New York had 17 sightings each. Ohio had 16. Georgia and Indiana had 15 each. Washington State had 12. South Carolina had 10 reports. And 21 remaining states and the District of Columbia had less than 10 reports each. So we'll keep an eye on that. Now, I didn't really write down a prediction, but maybe I should just do it just for the heck of it. Let's think. Now, last month in May, the month of May, 900 total worldwide reports, with 737 of them coming from the United States. I don't think we'll get anywhere near that. It's let me think. So we had 561. I'm going to go with 585 worldwide reports. In my U.S., let's see, 403. We're going to give it, we're going to go, 419. That sounds like a nice round number. 419 from the U.S. We'll see how close I get. I was way off this month. I wasn't even close, for crying out loud. I probably shouldn't do this anymore. It's going to make myself look bad. But anyway, we'll check it out. Hopefully, we'll have those numbers to you a month from now. It's kind of weird to do it back-to-back here. But thanks again. Big thanks again to MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton for this month's sighting statistics. And, of course, to Jancy Harzan for pushing that information out. And just a reminder, if you want to keep tabs with what's going on here with the Paranormal News Insider, you can always do that. You can always find out what I'm up to, what I'm doing through social media. Great. Yeah. Dita's written down my prediction, so I'm in trouble. I'm all over the place with that and with social media. Facebook.com/ParanewsInsider, on Twitter with @ParanewsInsider, as well as Google Plus @+ParanewsInsider. Yeah, you can find that everywhere. And I think, what's the other page I have? Oh, I can't remember. I can't even keep track of what I'm doing. Pinterest. I do have a Pinterest. I don't know why, but it's fun. It's interesting. Every time I see books or anything like that, I put that on my Pinterest page. Got to be, 21st century. You got to be everywhere on social media. And if you're listening to the show live, thank you. Thank you very much for listening live. And of course, right after the show's over, you can find it on Mixcloud pretty much right away here on the internet, the intranet here. And it's usually get around to posting it. Sometimes I have to get my beauty sleep. Tonight is Friday for me, so I'm off the next couple of days from work. Thank goodness. And I'll be posting that information probably tonight as I listen to Frank and Kat talk tonight. And Mixcloud has an app. There's an app for that. So you can listen on your phone. You can listen on your computer. You can listen on your tablet, however you want to. And the following day, usually, I upload my stuff to Podbean, which is the official home for the archives of the Paranormal News Insider. And there's also an app for that. And I also have Stitcher, Spreaker, and iTunes as well. So anyway, I'm trying to get it out there. So everyone has their favorite way of listening to music. Me, I like my boombox and cassette tapes. Some people like the internet and these newfangled podcast things. I don't know. I'm still catching up. Anyway, ghost news. Heaven. It happened. Yeah, somebody discovered heaven. And they have proof. How did that happen? Well, what would it take to have proof of heaven? I mean, just think about that. What would it take? How would you prove to somebody else that heaven does indeed exist? I mean, would you hit him with a rock and kill him and then try to resuscitate him? I don't know. But think about that. How would you have proof of heaven without actually having to die? It's one of those long-standing philosophical questions, but somebody figured it out. It's simple, and you didn't even think of this. How about just going there and taking a picture with your camera? Yes, it's that easy. South African pastor Most Sonig Maboro, if I pronounce that correctly, probably not, but that's okay, states that he has such proof that he got with his Samsung Galaxy S5, the official camera phone of heaven. Pastor Maboro was in a bit of trouble because he was caught charging money to see the photos. How much, you ask? Well, about $340. I mean, I got some pretty cool pictures, and, you know, I don't charge anything for them. And he was facing extortion charges for charging money to see this. Now, after he found out that he got caught for that, he claimed that he was willing to share the photos on Facebook for free. But he also claimed the reason why he was charging was he just kind of wanted a little bit of a pledge for his church. And he was just willing to share the photos, but asking for, you know, just a little donation. Well, then he was getting his car washed when suddenly his phone disappeared. Now, he claims that boys at the local car wash stole the phone. And one of the pastor's bodyguards stated, quote, this is a quote, "The pictures were really there. I saw them. We suspect one of the boys washing the prophet's car took the phone, but they all denied taking it, even after we threatened them. All those who have deposited money will be refunded," unquote. Well, thank goodness for that. And thank goodness I don't work at that car wash. Good grief. The pastor claims that he was able to ascend to heaven on Easter Sunday. Pastor Maboro has been in trouble with the law in the past about his questionable financial background surrounding his church. As for the heaven photos, he stated that he was going to post the photos to Facebook for free after being caught, of course, selling the photos. But I guess now we'll never know what heaven looks like. Well, at least I won't. Maybe you will. I'll have no chance unless we find his camera. So, other news. Pop goes the weasel. Sad story out of France here. Well, let me throw this link here about this phone in here. Boom. Yes, he'll probably go to hell for taking pictures of heaven. I think that's just kind of how it works out. So Pop Goes the Weasel. Sad story here. It's been making its rounds on the paranormal news. But in all actuality, it's Pop Goes the Beach Martin, actually. A beach martin is a member of the mustelids family, along with the weasel. Now, this little beach martin made its way into a transformer last week, an electrical transformer, and decided to chew through the wires. Well, this in turn created a power outage, which shut down the Large Hadron Collider. Oops. The 17-mile circuit on the Swiss-French border, which is operated by CERN, had to shut down operations of the $4.4 billion facility because of a little weasel. Sadly, though, the little furry guy did not turn into the Flash. He didn't turn into the Reverse Flash or any characters from the DC universe or transported to some other dimension where he had superpowers or could talk. He was pretty much fried. He was killed. No word on if PETA or anyone else will now protest the site or not, even though this actually has happened before. Beach martins and weasels are nearly identical, and while the beach martin primarily lives in Europe and Asia, there are a small band of them in the wild in Wisconsin due to being accidentally released into the wild. These wild North American beach martins descended from martins that escaped a fur factory in the 1940s. So there's some interesting trivia for you. And let's talk Bigfoot. Well, you know, CERN, with this Large Hadron Collider, we've kind of been watching this thing for quite a long time. There's been some big stories about it. I've always said that some of our greatest answers about the paranormal will actually come through stuff like this in the beginning. And we'll forget about all these stories, but down the road, the Large Hadron Collider will eventually provide some information, if not about UFO information, but potentially even about psi phenomena, about ghosts and things. So it's nice to talk about the Large Hadron Collider in a different light. And that's why I talk about that in the paranormal news. Anyway, Bigfoot has been found. He's found and was actually briefly captured in London by the police. That's true. It actually happened. This is not made up. It's true. Bigfoot was found and was briefly captured in London, England. Well, it wasn't Bigfoot like no. It wasn't Bigfoot like you're thinking. It wasn't the large hairy guy that is featured in Jack Link's commercials and car commercials. No. That's not what I meant. It was a Bigfoot. It was actually a giant foot, a big foot. It was a motorized giant foot. Oh, so you thought I was talking about Bigfoot. Like, oh, okay. No, it was a giant foot. No, not London, Kentucky. It was actually London, England. And the reason for this, it was a giant motorized foot. Police in London's Wandsworth Borough tweeted a photo of a man in a fire suit wearing a motorcycle helmet, driving a motorized foot over the sidewalk. If that wasn't strange enough, the man was being assisted by a woman wearing a captain's outfit complete with hat. You can't make this stuff up, folks. The motorized foot was about 6 feet long and about 5.5 feet high at the ankle. The spectacle was part of the Wandsworth Arts Fringe Festival, which takes place May 6th through May 22nd. And the foot is just the warm-up to the zany event, showcasing street performances, dancing, exhibitions, and just general craziness. And to be honest, it sounds like my kind of party. So I gotta jump into the book of the week here. We got a little bit of time left. And really important that I cover this book, because this really ties in with what's happening this weekend in Farmington, Pennsylvania, with the Bigfoot Camping Adventure, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, with host Eric Altman. And again, I'll be speaking at that event. Stan Gordon will be speaking at that event. Squatch Detective Radio host Steve Coles will be speaking at that event. Dave Dragason and wildlife biologist Rob Gratson will also be speaking at that event. And again, Trapper John R. Tice from the TV show Mountain Monsters will be making an appearance that afternoon at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, the book that I want to talk about is called Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. And it's a very important book because of the significance of this area that we're going to be investigating in. It was a hotbed in the 1970s, 1972 through 1974. This particular book, Silent Invasion, was actually showcases hundreds of cases. I'm not kidding here, hundreds of cases. And the book breaks down these cases day to day to day. It's really, really interesting how this book has really documented all this stuff. And it's a great documentation of all these events that happened in southwestern Pennsylvania. Various counties, Westmoreland County kind of was the hub of all this, but a lot of other counties surrounding Westmoreland County. in, again, 1972 through 1974, as documented by Stan Gordon. And the book itself was actually edited by a guy named Roger Marsh. And if you've ever heard of Roger Marsh, he's a member of MUFON and part of MUFON here, the Mutual UFO Network. He's a writer and pretty popular guy as far as the UFO stuff, Roger Marsh. So this book was Stan Gordon, again, chock full of case information. And as you read through this book, you begin to make correlations with some of the sighting information. Lots of stuff with red eyes. Many descriptions of Bigfoots. And again, this is the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot casebook. And the reason why it's UFOs and Bigfoot is because there was a lot of UFO and Bigfoot sightings at the same time, which a lot of people ask about. Well, this book, if you want to explore that topic, this is the book to look at it for. Lots of UFO sightings, lots of Bigfoot sightings. The Bigfoot sightings are just really off the wall, just insane. But Stan Gordon isn't, he's not some loon. He's not out there. He's very grounded, very scientific, very methodical. As you read the book, you read how he goes about his casework, which is really interesting. And it's really grounded in science. And he just problem solves through this book or through these sightings. And it's just when you see this zaniness and this general craziness and these high strangeness cases over and over and over, you start to lose your groundness. I mean, you start to believe in some of these strange things like Bigfoot just basically disappearing into thin air. People were shooting these Bigfoot and they just disappeared. So you begin to, you know, to think different things that could potentially be happening. And you know, I don't want to give away too much of this book, but it's just awesome. Now, for me, it's exciting because I've investigated this particular area, Chestnut Ridge, to be exact, and been parts of this. Butler is mentioned in this book, and a lot of places that I've been in, some places that I've camped out in years and years ago are mentioned in this book as well. So it's, again, through the 1970s, tons of cases, and it got kind of out of control because it was in the media. It was in the newspapers, and, you know, some people were probably making things up. But overall, it's an awesome book to really go through this, and it does kind of provide a little bit of a painting of these particular sightings. And just to throw something else out there, many of these Bigfoot sightings had three-toed tracks. I know we've heard about that before, but a majority of these particular tracks that were found in southwest Pennsylvania, again, Westmoreland County, Fayette County, Allegheny County, Washington County, Beaver County, Indiana County, that general area there, surrounding Pittsburgh, was the hotbed for all this activity from 1972 through 1974. And Chestnut Ridge, I got the chance to go out 2013 with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and got to go up there and investigate. We're looking for UFOs, looking for Bigfoot. And we got some interesting evidence, or I should say data, from that particular evening, or actually the whole weekend. And so that's one of my favorite places. We'll be pretty close to that area this weekend for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. So the book of the week, again, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot casebook, Stan Gordon. Awesome guy, great researcher, awesome researcher. Not even great, just beyond great. Awesome researcher, great guy to talk to about different things. And again, he'll be speaking with me this Saturday at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. And again, I'll, you know, maybe have a little bit of a breakdown with that next week. We'll see if I have time. And I mentioned the Erie UFO Conference. We've got a couple of – May is like the beginning, the unofficial. Usually April has a lot. Well, they had a few, I guess, about five events. So the year is underway with paranormal conferences, conventions. If you have any in your area, I highly recommend you check them out. And my listing, if you go to paranewsinsider.com, you can click on the events tab at the top. And it has a listing. Now, it's not a complete listing. I do my best. I do what I can to get those particular – individual things out there to you. And I do some research when I can to dig up the stuff. But I do provide, you know, it's free. I just throw it on there for everybody. But if you have any information about any event and you don't see it on this list and you want me to talk about it, you want to see it on the website, let me know. I can't get everything. I'm not that good. Insider at ParanewsInsider.com. Find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. Find me on Google+. Find me on the street. I don't know. I'm here. Let me know about these events and I'll put them on there. May 12th through the May 15th, we have the Paradigm Symposium 2015 taking place up in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have the 6th Annual Afterlife Awareness Conference, May 12th through the 15th in St. Louis, Missouri. The New Jersey Para-Unity Expo, May 14th in Woodbridge, New Jersey. Few more here in May, but UFO wise, again, we just had the MUFON PA conference 2016 that took place in Erie. Missed that one. I heard it was really, really good. Probably should have had Audrey come on here and talk about it. I didn't think of that. Maybe we can do that. But they have Pennsylvania. If you're interested in that, they have a couple more coming up later on this year. MUFON Philadelphia Area UFO Conference. Said I would mention it. October 28th and 29th in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. That's the Philadelphia area. Then MUFON Pittsburgh Area UFO Conference takes place in November, November 19th in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Again, Pittsburgh area. And we have the McMenamins UFO Festival. They say I say it wrong every year. May 12th through the 15th in McMinnville, Oregon. The Dulce Base UFO Conference, May 14th through the 15th in Dulce, New Mexico. And then we have a few in June, a few in August, or one in August, I should say, the big one, 2016 MUFON Symposium down in Orlando, Florida, August 25th through the 28th. That's the big one. Cryptozoology, I just mentioned, in case you missed it, the beginning of the show, I don't think you could have. The 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I'll be speaking at that event, if you didn't know that, along with a host of other people. May 6th to the 8th, Farmington, Pennsylvania. If you don't have your tickets, you're pretty much out of luck. But you can show up and find out. If you got cash in hand, maybe I'll squeeze you in the door. I don't know. And then on May 12th, I'll be at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio. May 12th, 7 p.m. That's Thursday. I'll be speaking on cryptozoology. I'll also be returning to that library in October to talk about ghosts, the paranormal, all that fun stuff. Ohio Bigfoot Conference, May 14th at the Salt Fork State Park Lodge and Conference Center in Lower City, Ohio. Again, May 14th. I'm not going to that event. I wasn't invited, and I don't have tickets anyway. But there's a bunch of those in that particular area. That's the Sasquatch Triangle. And Salt Fork State Park is like the hub of all that activity down there. Cambridge, Ohio. There's also Creature Weekend in Cambridge, Ohio in June. And I think there's another one there. I don't know. It's not on my calendar. But anyway, that's a hotbed of activity area down there, Lower City, Ohio. So what else we got? I think that's it. Did I cover everything? I think I did. Lots of information, a couple of stories here that didn't quite make it. I did post one earlier today about tips if you want to be a Bigfoot hunter. I thought it was a cute story. Basically, five little tips here for being a Bigfoot investigator. Science is hard. Study anyway is the number one thing. And I agree. It's not something that you can't just believe in something and study it. But check that story out if you're on Facebook. Check out the Paranews Insider Facebook page and read this little story. It's pretty funny, pretty cute, but it's accurate information. It's really good information for five little things. And they kept it short because they had the little TLDR, too long, didn't read thing. I think that's what it stands for. I don't know anymore. Anyway, big thanks to Cindy, as always, my producer, and to Dita for corralling the kids in the chat room as always, and for everyone else tuning in tonight, whether live or on the archives. Keep an eye in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
I'm Andrea.
And I'm Krista.
And we're back.
Starting May 12th on WCJV Radio.
Tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m.
And we'll be discussing everyday witchcraft.
And how to incorporate it into your everyday life.
Be sure to tune into our chat room.
We'll see you then.